Tweet at Today SOR.
Needless to say, a lot of reaction to that conversation with Karen and Peter Robinson, who lost their 14-year-old boy, Ben. Heartbreaking, says one listener. Heartbreaking to listen to Benjamin's last game as narrated by his mam. Eugene says, my thoughts go to that poor lady. Heartbreaking to hear this sad, sad story. John in Limerick, I want to thank Karen for telling her story about her son. I know that by telling it, she will have saved the lives of other young schoolboys. She's very brave. Christy Galligan on Twitter, all children under the age of 18 years should wear headguards. Rugby is a very physical game. People can get hurt. David Fleming, also on Twitter, says, what a harrowing interview on At Today SOR with the family of 14-year-old Benjamin Robinson, who died from second impact syndrome after a rugby game. Similar view from Owen Deneen on Twitter, heartbreaking interview on Today SOR. Sean says, Susan in Malahide, my heart is breaking listening to Ben's parents describe his injuries. As a mother of a 9-year-old who plays rugby every week, I'd like to thank them for raising awareness of this issue of secondary concussion, and I will ensure that his club does likewise. And another note, really difficult, says Anthony O'Connell, really difficult listening to this woman. I just finished reading an incredible book on concussion, mainly in American football, and its effects on the brain. Multiple concussions over time lead to dementia, and the TUA protein in the brain of men in their 40s being the equivalent of boxers with Parkinson's in their 80s. Rugby really needs to wake up to this at all levels, from kids all the way through to pros. It took too long for the NFL to wake up to it. After all the lives it cost and families it's destroyed, it's now cost them over $1 billion in compensation. They now have neuro consultants on the line at pro games who can override team managers and pull levers. I'm not sure this is an issue that's confined to rugby, not by any manner or means, but it's something that we will be following up on in the days to come. Something that will be, of course, of particular interest to parents as their children go back to school and resume sports training. Now to something entirely different. As we say, I'm joined by our workplace guru, Paul Mooney. Paul, thank you for coming in. You're here to talk about time management, something that affects most people in their jobs, but not just people, I suppose, in their jobs, but people with things to do or that they want to get done. Before we talk to some of your key guidelines, I think you have an interesting story from the history books about one Duke of Wellington and his attitude to the importance of time management.
Sure. Good morning, Sean. Yeah, it just shows you that this is, not too many ideas are brand new. This is a letter from the Duke of Wellington written to the British Foreign Office. And here's what he said. We've enumerated our saddles, bridles, tents and tent poles and all manner of sundry items for which His Majesty's government holds me accountable. Unfortunately, the sum of 1 shilling and 9 pence remains unaccounted for in one infantry battalion, and there's been a hideous confusion as to the number of jars of raspberry jam issued to one cavalry regiment. This brings me to my present purpose, which is to request elucidation of my instructions. Is it to train an army of uniformed British clerks in Spain for the benefit of the accounting and copy boys in London, or perchance to see to it that the forces of Napoleon are driven out of Spain?
In other words, decide what you want me to do. What do you want me to do? And Paul, I suppose one of your mantras in this is that people should prioritise what's important rather than what's urgent.
Yeah, just to put it in context, Sean, and this applies to everybody, but just to put it in context of a sort of an executive life, one guy I was working with last year in one of the larger technology companies, on average, he got 500 emails a day. Now, when you have that much incoming sort of artillery, it's sometimes very difficult to sort out the wheat from the chaff. So you have to decide what you want to do. And you think about somebody in a managerial role, they could be focused on customer service, employee relations, they could be focused on revenue enhancement, they could be focused on business process re-engineering or a whole number of other things. And the whole thing is you can't do everything. You've only so much time in the day. There's only so much things you can focus on. And your starting point in time management is to decide what are the key things that I'm going to achieve, because there's tons of noise.
Right. So in other words, you have to set your objectives.
You have to set your objectives. Absolutely crystal clear. They use different titles in different companies, key performance indicators, objectives, etc. But you have to know where the goalposts are.
And that would mean, say, for somebody with a particular job, look, it's really important, I suppose, that, you know, I look after my kids, or that I, you know, make sure that there's food on the table, you know, at a particular time or whatever. I mean, maybe that goes without saying, but how do you set about, you know, setting or deciding those kind of objectives?
Well, it's difficult. There's this confusion between what's sometimes termed inputs and outputs, Sean. And it was an old joke. I don't know if it was supposed to be set in Cork. I don't know whether it'll work or not, but the two sales reps are talking and one rep says to the other, I made a lot of strategic contacts today. And the other rep said, yeah, I didn't get any sales either. So you have to focus on what's an output or an achievement or an end result. People get focused on busyness. I'm on a plane this week. I have to fly to Brussels. I have 3 meetings in the States. I have so many reports to write, etc. And all of those things are inputs. What you have to really focus on, what's the end goal that you're trying to achieve and make sure that you're moving the needle.
Yeah, and just take something like a meeting. I suppose if there's a meeting, there's a fixed time, there's a fixed day, so the chances are you're going to get there. But what's really important is preparing for it and putting time into preparing for it so that you know what you want to get out of the meeting. And maybe that's where you need to attack things like the distractions. You mentioned the 500 emails.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And even a more sort of subtle thing, I think we have a gravitational pull towards what we like doing. For example, if you train in marketing or in your case, journalism or whatever, there's a gravitational pull towards what you know. Sometimes then when people move jobs, if they become more senior in an organisation, as an example, or even people at home in a domestic sense, you know, I hate painting myself. I don't do any painting. So I have a gravitational pull towards anything other than painting or doing the garden or whatever it is. Now, that's okay in the home scene and the domestic scene. It's probably okay and you can get away with that. But in the work scene, you can't get away with that because you end up not doing the job that you've been paid to do. You need to focus on, you need to understand what the goals are. You need to understand what you've been paid to do. And in a funny way, and this probably sounds a bit robotic, Sean, you need to work your diary to make sure that you're spending time on the things you're supposed to be spending time to and you're not caught by distractions.
Yeah, we have 168 hours available to us in any given week. Are you saying in that, Paul, that you need actually, first of all, to have a diary and how much detail should one get into in filling up its pages?
Yeah, well, in fact, there's a bit of a movement away from physical diaries in the last couple of years. I mean,
you have them on your phone or whatever.
Have them on your phone, for sure. But people sometimes used to use file of faxes and a physical diary and even segment their time into, and there was all sorts of different ways to do it. People had green time, amber time and red time and different ways to sort of structure their day. Now, regardless of which system you use, the underpinning principle here is that there are certain things that have to get done and that you have to schedule those. It's a bit like, you know, in a sense, it's like saying I have to catch a flight. So I have to be at the airport an hour ahead of the flight or 2 hours ahead of the flight. If you have something to get done, you have to schedule it and put time into the diary to do it and make sure that it happens. And then in a sense, stop being too available or too open to distractions and other things that are happening.
Now, what are the particular specifics on that one, just about shutting out distractions?
Well, there's a couple of things we mentioned on technology itself, Sean. I mean, some people get a ping. If people who work at computers, you get a ping sometimes every time an email comes in or a tweet or whatever. And sometimes people are just addicted to this. They're just addicted to constantly being up to date. So they have this continual low level noise, which is a distraction all the time. Now, my advice to people is not to check their email. Maybe check it twice a day or 3 times a day if it's really that important, and to check it within defined timeline, so to knock off those notifications.
Similarly with texts, would you say?
Similarly, unless it depends on the business you're in. I mean, if you're in a business that's an emergency response business, maybe you don't have an option to do that. But very few of us are in a business that's emergency
response.
Yeah,
but it's very easy to spend, I suppose, even maybe 30 or 40 seconds responding to a text, but then that might lead to another text. Texts beget texts, and all of a sudden you could have wasted 10 minutes.
Well, you do the math, Sean. 500 emails a day by 40 seconds, right? It's about, you know, 200 minutes. That's over 3 hours. So you can very easily, your day can get washed away. Another thing, and this is a bit of a subtle thing, is a further principle is the ability to say no. There's an assertiveness issue around time management because sometimes people, and it's meant to be, I mean, it's people are sort of generous with their time and maybe over generous with their time. But there's been a lot of movement in recent years to open door policies and being open to communication and being very available to people who work for you, etc. But sometimes people do that at the expense of getting their own work done. So it's not saying that you should be in an ivory tower or lock yourself yourself away, but maybe that you just blank out times
like
in the day.
Like to take on an engagement maybe that might be at the margins, not necessary, but, you know, it'd be nice for some people if you were able to show up for something, or it might be a party, it could be anything. But I suppose adding to that, one might say, there's nothing worse than a slow no. If you're going to say no, say it quickly.
I haven't heard that expression before. Yeah, that's a good one. We'll have to add that to the list. Yeah, it's the ability to say no. There was a book written a few years ago called The 1 Minute Manager Meets the Monkey. And the basic
guy called Blanchard, is that the guy's name?
Yes, yeah, very good. That's exactly him. And the fundamental idea, just a kind of a simple idea in the book, was that sometimes people come to you with a problem. That's what he was calling the monkey. And sometimes people allowed the monkey jump from the back of the person who owns the problem onto their back. So if you don't watch it, you can end up with a lot of monkeys.
And just the other thing is that people can, maybe less so now, but maybe what you said about the emails applies, but getting snowed under with paper.
Yeah, one of the things, I mean, this is a kind of a red thread, runs through a lot of the time management stuff, is that you should handle each piece of paper once. So when you go to do a task, you deal with it. Now, some tasks are complicated, so they use there's a second idea in here called the Swiss cheese principle. So if you have a very big project to do, sometimes you need to put a hole in it and continually put holes in it until it collapses. But sometimes people procrastinate about big tasks. They say, yeah, well, I'll get a full day in the diary, or I'll get 2 days together when I've no distractions and I'll tackle that. And usually it's a procrastination. You need to start tackling it. If it's important, you need to.
You could be referring, Paul Mooney, to, I have a big file at home and it consists of a big collection, probably over 100, of lovely messages and cards I got around about this time last year. Tomorrow is, in fact, the first anniversary of starting on the show. And I have the best of intentions to write to all of those people and thank them. But, you know, I haven't actually opened that. And it is important to me that those people be thanked. Well, and I apologise to them now.
Well, you have a way to deal with that. At least you're doing it now on air. But for most of us, we have that big file, Sean, but we've no way to deal with it.
No, but if somebody writes to you, I think you should write back. I mean, you should personalise it, but I'm not exactly practising what I preach. So how am I going to get that done? You say the Swiss cheese approach, yeah?
I think so.
Maybe do three a day for the next
do
month.
Do three a day for your penance for the next couple of months and you'll be cured, Sean.
Okay, well, look, maybe when you come back next month, Paul, or whenever you're back again, I'll be able to give you a progress report. You're allowed to ask one question. Paul Mooney, workplace expert, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks
for coming
very much indeed.
To the studio. Back with more after this break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.